Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When rockers wade into classical music, anything can happen. Even this. I'm John Schaefer, and this is Soundcheck. Today on the show, a look at rock music's classical impulses. And later, the local bassist and composer Alexis Cuadrado unveils a new epic piece called Nonetto Iberico, live in our studio. But to begin, rock musicians have been slumming in the world of classical music almost since the dawn of rock. This 1972 live recording by Emerson, Lake & Palmer, performing Hoedown from Aaron Copland's Rodeo, is among the more outrageous crossover attempts, but Radiohead, The Beatles, Metallica, they've all heard their songs arranged for a variety of classical ensembles. Some rockers have even composed original works, including most recently Trey Anastasio from the band Phish. In a moment, we'll talk with the frontman of the band Third Eye Blind about his run-in with a chamber orchestra. But first, we're joined in studio by the humorist and writer Joe Queenan. He wrote about the curious combo of rock and classical music in the New York Times recently. Joe, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
You use the term chemical alchemy, which sounds okay, but you really seem to be kind of down on the whole thing. Why is that?
I actually think they're funny. I mean, they're amusing records. Zappa did a lot of this stuff, and Procol Harum, you know, channeled Bach, and there was a lot of Ravel.
Famously in A Whiter Shade of Pale.
Right, yeah. I think they're fun. I'm not entirely sure why the musicians do it. I'm not quite sure, like, why Paul McCartney. I know Paul McCartney has a desperate need to make things kind of slurpy. So he'll write a beautiful song of his own, and then he puts the strings on. And as you heard, when they took Phil Spector's strings out of Let It Be, mm-hmm. It's a great record once you take all that stuff out. So I don't know exactly why the musicians want to be composers in a sort of classical sense. I mean, that to me is the most interesting thing.
Well, maybe it is. I mean, and I misspoke when I said chemical alchemy. You said cultural alchemy. Maybe it is a genuine kind of cultural impulse. I mean, maybe some of these guys just genuinely love classical music. Although in Paul McCartney's case, it would be a genuine love of old classical music.
And in Paul McCartney's case, it would be a genuine love of old classical music orchestrated by somebody else, because he didn't do the orchestrations for Standing Stone. And, you know, Standing Stone has some beautiful music in it, because mm-hmm. he's a great melodist. I mean, Paul McCartney is a great, great musician. But the orchestration is done by his colleague. And it was the same with the Liverpool Oratorio. I think with Paul, it might be, I'm from a working class background. So part of the attraction of classical music is, oh, now I'm grown up. Now I'm an adult. And I'm sure Paul has some of that, is that he grew up in Liverpool and people looked down on him. And then all of a sudden he's performing the Liverpool Oratorio in the church, in the cathedral. So I think that there's a certain sense of that. I think with Elvis Costello, it's more Elvis Costello literally wants to try everything, because he's done... He's delved into the opera. He's delved into ballet. With Roger Waters, his opera, I don't know what, I think he's trying to redo Les Mis or something like that. And with Zappa, who's the most interesting case, I think Frank Zappa hated pop music. And he just felt he was too grown up to keep doing this, and he got tired of it. And when you go back and you listen to Zappa, Zappa was a great parodist and a great satirist, and the best music that Zappa did was his rock and roll music. I think that Live at the Fillmore is his best record.
But he really wanted to whip a little classical music on the kids, you know, to the point of having Edgar Varese's solo flute piece,
right.
Density, and now I'm going to forget the number, 21.5, whatever it is, played, you know, live as sort of an opener for his various concerts, and then writing pieces, including, you know, one of his sort of earlier classical works is this piece called The Black Page. Here's a little bit from Frank Zappa.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit of music from Frank Zappa. That's actually Black Page number 2. And another example of classical music coming from an unexpected corner of the rock world, pianist Billy Joel and his suite for piano, this excerpt called Star-Crossed. Some of Billy Joel's classical music, the suite for piano. Then there's the case of Elvis Costello collaborating with the Brodsky String Quartet on the Juliet Letters.
Is anyone there I can talk to? Give us a sign if you're with me. Can't you see that I'm dying to hear you? Everyone else is lost in dress, and I'm all alone in this dream house. Though you're gone, I don't feel like crying.
Some of the Juliet Letters from Elvis Costello with the Brodsky String Quartet. So, Joe Queenan, you said Frank Zappa is a really interesting case. We began with a little bit of his Black Page number 2. What do you make of, say, Billy Joel, the solo piano music that we heard?
Well, Billy Joel is a very talented musician, so he can parody anybody. So he's just somebody who can sit down and you say, play Rachmaninoff, and he can knock something off, or play Couperin, or play Bach. He can just do it. And that's what those pieces are. They're pieces that sound like Chopin, they sound like Liszt, they sound like Mendelssohn, but they're really thin.
Well, he didn't intend them as parodies.
No, but they are parodies. I mean, that's what they are, is that they're the little kid dressing up in his dad's clothes, and it's like, let me be like Chopin. Well, there's layers and layers and layers in Chopin and Liszt that are just staggering, and those pieces are thin. They sound okay. I mean, they sound like if somebody said in the movie, play something original that sounds like it would have been played at the time of Henry VIII, or, you know, in this particular case, at the time of, say, Napoleon Bonaparte. That's what he can do. He's, you know, John Tesh can do that. John Tesh went to Juilliard. I saw John Tesh at Carnegie Hall one time because I was doing a book about trying to find something in America that was worse than Cats. And John Tesh was...
So you went right to John Tesh.
Well, John Tesh was number 2. And John Tesh had a bunch of classical musicians playing with him. And as a sort of stunt, he would say, well, play something by Haydn, well, play something by, not Varese, but Beethoven. But it's just a stunt. Mm-hmm. Elvis Costello is a really interesting case, though. I met Elvis Costello on the roof of the Bellagio Hotel a long time ago in Los Angeles. I was the next to last guest on the Chevy Chase show. And he was out there making a record, Brutal Youth. And we were the only people in the pool. And I went up and I started talking to him. He's a great guy, very, very, very warm and interesting guy. And I said to him, I went to see you when you did the Juliet Letters at the with the Brodsky Quartet at Town Hall in New York. And it was probably the most memorable concert I'd ever been to in my life because I felt that every single person in that room was a hardcore Elvis Costello fan. There were no comps. They weren't papering the room. There were no flacks. It was just the hardcore fans. And he did the Juliet Letters, and then he did 4 encores. He did God Only Knows, and he did They Wouldn't Believe Me. And then people wouldn't leave. So he said, well, do you want to do hear some more of the Juliet Letters? Well, he did the entire Juliet Letters through a second time, and then he did the 4 encores. And I never forgot that concert. But I never bought that record.
Why?
Because it's not rock. I want to hear, if I want to hear classical music, and that's actually more like show tunes. It's just because you have a string quartet in back of you, that's Eleanor Rigby. That doesn't make it classical music. Because Elvis Costello is a great, great pop star, and that's what I want to listen to. When I hear the Juliet Letters, I think they are very interesting. I think of all of these things that anybody has done, they're the most interesting. With Zappa, that keyboard is so annoying. That keyboard that he used endlessly just puts that music so much in a particular time in the 70s, a dark time for music, for everything. And I just can't stand listening to those pieces.
We're speaking with Joe Queenan, the humorist and author. You can read his New York Times story about rock musicians and classical music. It's called Two Great Tastes, But Not Great Together, on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. The article seems to have been triggered by the recent performance from Trey Anastasio of the band Phish with the New York Philharmonic, who you seem to be willing to give a pass to in the article.
Yeah, because what he did, it sounds like Phish. I mean, what he did, you can go online and listen to a previous recording that he did with the Orchestra Nashville. And what he did was, instead of going back to Hector Berlioz, like McCartney did, or instead of doing what all movie composers do, is they just redo Gustav Holst's Planets and The Rite of Spring, and they do a great job with it. I have no problem with that. But it's just derivative. It sounds like something you heard before. Whereas what Trey Anastasio did was he actually wrote a piece of music that sounded like it was written by Trey Anastasio and not by Gustav Holst. And so I think that's great.
This is a little bit of the piece by Trey Anastasio with the New York Philharmonic. It was played at Carnegie Hall on September 12th, and it's called Time Turns Elastic.
Melody, shelter in the darkness, take hold of me now. Memory, trapped in a corner, dark fingers along.
That's just a little bit from Trey Anastasio singing, playing the electric guitar with the New York Philharmonic live at Carnegie Hall on September 12th, the piece called Time Turns Elastic. Joe, do you know whether Trey did his own orchestrations for this?
I think that he did. I think he studied composition, and I'm hearing a lot of Gershwin in that.
I'm hearing an echo of Zappa in some of the orchestration.
But still, it's not... I think a classical composer, if such a term even exists anymore, listening to that would say, well, it's not 150 years behind what we're doing. It's 50 years behind what we're doing. It's sort of, you know, channeling Gershwin and Ravel. But the New York Times reviewed that piece. Steve Smith, I think, reviewed it, who's not a classical. He's, a jazz and pop.
No, he does classical.
Really?
Thing. Yeah.
Because he made the point that the musicians were stone-faced at the end, that everybody was enjoying it and the musicians were stone-faced. And I thought, give those guys a break, okay? The next piece that they performed after Trey Anastasio's Concerto for Orchestra was Mahler's Third, and that's why they got into the business. Mm-hmm. They got into the business to play Mahler's Third Symphony and not to play somebody's taking the night off, having a little fun, and classical musicians, by and large, I don't think those guys have a lot of fun.
Well, a word from the control room is that the orchestration was done by Don Hart, actually.
From
a well-known commercial arranger and orchestrator. Did the orchestration for Orchestra Nashville when Trey Anastasio played the piece with them. Let me read you a quick comment from our website. Jay from New York writes, "The framing of this discussion is somewhat misguided. The basic differences between classical and rock music are rhythmic and harmonic, not instrumentation and orchestration. You can play a Bach suite on an electric guitar or Pink Floyd with an orchestra without changing the music at its heart." Pink Floyd played by an orchestra. What do you think?
Boring.
Does it change the music?
Of course it changes the music. I mean, it's like Led Zeppelin. You want to hear Jimmy Page or you want to hear the New York Philharmonic. You want to hear Jimmy Page. It's like all of these things, like, you know, jazz fusion stuff where Claude Bowling would play these sort of jazzed up versions of Bach. Well, it's neither this nor that. In this particular case, it's neither Phish nor Fowl. But I think that, no, there's profound differences between the way the Goldberg variations are played on the piano and they were originally written for the harpsichord, and the way Jimmy Page plays. And it's not to say that one is better than the other. They serve completely different functions. What interests me is why, I've always been interested in why Duke Ellington wanted to write an opera, or why Paul McCartney, who's one of the most famous musicians that ever lived, well, why does he want to write an oratorio? And I think that in many of these cases, it's not the same motivation for these people. The motivation for Zappa is a kind of contempt for pop music that I don't think Paul McCartney has.
Right.
And with Pink Floyd, with Roger Waters, he wrote Ça Ira, which is a
big opera. Yeah.
I think maybe that's a kind of natural extension of Pink Floyd, because Pink Floyd's a big theatrical type of band.
Right. That did seem, for all that the opera was a flop, it did seem like, you know, it wasn't coming out of left field. On the other hand, what about the Kinks reinterpreted as choral music?
I haven't heard it.
Well, I mean, we're going to give you an opportunity. here's some of it right now. So give a listen. Mm-hmm. Let me know what you think. We'll come back in a minute, and we're actually going to talk to Stephen Jenkins, the frontman of the band Third Eye Blind, who recently performed with a 30-piece orchestra in San Francisco. We're speaking with Joe Queenan about the collision of rock musicians and classical music on Soundcheck. Not the Kinks, but an amazing simulation from the Crouch End Festival Chorus at the 2007 BBC Electric Proms in London. In a moment, we speak with alternative rock band Third Eye Blind frontman Stephen Jenkins about tiptoeing into the world of chamber music. And we'll continue our conversation with Joe Queenan and with you. We'll want to hear you at 212-433-WNYC or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Later on the show, we'll hear the premiere of a new work by this Brooklyn-based jazz bassist and composer, Alexis Quadrado. He and his band will play live. It's a debut later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We've been talking so far with humorist and writer Joe Queenan about collaborations between rock and classical music, musicians. The alternative band Third Eye Blind, whom you're hearing in the background, they're the latest rock outfit to wade into classical waters. The band's frontman, Stephen Jenkins, has been presenting chamber music performances in the San Francisco mansion that doubles as his recording studio. Earlier this month, Jenkins teamed up with the arranger Mina Choi and her ensemble, the Magic Magic Orchestra, a 30-piece ensemble. They played songs from Third Eye Blind's new album, Ursa Major. I asked Stephen Jenkins about this yesterday, and actually started by asking what he wore for the occasion.
Well, I was dressed up as Mozart, frankly. and it just seemed like the right thing to do. And what was really funny about this, John, is that I felt very comfortable in this 18th century get-up.
So you were wearing, like, hosiery and a powdered wig and the whole thing?
Well, you know, a good wig and some hosiery really makes a man feel put together.
A side of Stephen Jenkins that Third Eye Blind fans have not seen much. Or will they? Will we be seeing?
Most certainly they will, because we had the good sense to film it and record it. And we're going to mix it and make it into something that will be shared with everybody at some point here.
So what was it like to hear, you know, an orchestra of that size doing arrangements of songs that you'd written?
Lovely. There's something about when you hear acoustic instruments in a room that is made for them. And the people who are there, by the way, we have an audience there. So the room is filled with people. And they're not being all hoity-toity like at the symphony. They're engaged, involved. But the music in its own compels you to some new new brackets of volume that are human from being acoustic and humanizing. And I think that's really something that makes it feel special.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about this project with the Magic Magic Orchestra doing the Third Eye Blind songs. And again, we're speaking with Stephen Jenkins, the front man of the band Third Eye Blind. Some will inevitably work better than others. Which did you think really worked best as an orchestral song?
I think that the Tao of St. Peter is the one that I enjoyed the most. Because I like it when somebody takes a song and they just let it roll through their consciousness and just sort of go off with it. I'm all for that. And that song seemed to yield itself really well. And then I liked what happened with Monotov's private opera because, you know, you have all these classical musicians and Mina Choi kind of turned it into like a rave. Monotov's private opera, when you hear it on Ursa Major, the album, is this sort of clunking, slow, brooding, meditative song.
How's to go under you, baby? It's you and only you.
And she's like, no, I wanted to go oomph, 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 oomph. So you have all these sort of classical musicians, you know, headbanging and smiling and rolling forward with it, with that totally different arrangement of the song, and everyone kind of got caught up with it.
Even when I'm talking to myself, I said, baby,
let me ask you this. I mean, you're not the first and won't be the last rock musician to want to collaborate this way with classical musicians. I mean, just in recent years, Metallica and Radiohead, and you can go all the way back to the Moody Blues and Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Why is that sound world so irresistible for so long to so many rockers?
Well, I think it's probably just the complexity of the voicings of the chords. And when you hear the timbres of the sounds, they're different and compelling. And that would be the reason for me. But, I can't speak for Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. I just can't. I don't know. I don't know what their reason is for. Maybe they want to please their parents. You know, I just want mom and dad to love me.
Now, what about going in the opposite direction? I mean, classical music fans coming to see an orchestra, and here's the orchestra with a singer, and they're doing Third Eye Blind songs. You know, what do you hope that a classical group of classical listeners can get from this sort of experience?
I don't know. In some ways, I've had so much disdain for the classical listening experience. I don't behave very well sitting in my seat with the smell of, you know, that sort of powdery perfume and you know, everyone having this practice cough and everything like that. I don't think that Mozart would have understood that. I don't think that they would have related to it. It's become so abstracted from feeling musical in some ways.
So just a final question. Would you ever try and write an orchestral piece?
Well, you know, I keep talking to people about scoring their films, and I got to do string arrangements on Vanessa Carlton's last couple of albums, and I enjoyed that very much. I really enjoy what we're doing, and I look forward to the next chamber night and being involved in something creative. And this thing that happened with the Magic Orchestra sort of appeared as a lark, and I certainly want to be open and vulnerable to more things like that happening, since this was such a joy.
Well, the new album by Third Eye Blind is called Ursa Major. We've been speaking with the band's frontman, Stephen Jenkins. And Stephen, thanks so much for taking some time.
John, thanks for having me.
A little more from Stephen Jenkins from the band Third Eye Blind, here not with that band, but with San Francisco's Magic Orchestra, recorded earlier this month. And on Soundcheck today, we're talking about the collision of rock music and rock musicians and classical music. Joe Queenan, his New York Times story about this topic is on the Soundcheck page, WNYC.org. Joe, what do you think of the idea, of who the audience? Who is the audience when rock musicians make that move into the classical world?
Probably people in their 30s. You know, probably people who are coming back to Third Eye Blind, because they were a big band in the 90s. He said one thing, though, which is the usual thing that they say about people at classical concerts, about how it's stuffy and it's people with perfume and everything. There's a difference between different venues that you go to. If you go to Carnegie Hall, there's loads of people from Japan and Korea. Those people feel every note. Those people are in love with that music. Those people are passionate. And then you go to the other extreme, like the New York Philharmonic or the Philadelphia Orchestra. You know, I have seats up in the rafters of the New York Philharmonic, and last year there was an elderly woman, about 85, and she collapsed, and I was holding her up against the wall, and all the other women are looking, and I turned around and said, it's not as bad as it seems, okay? And we called the emergency people. I have such admiration for those women. Those women get on a bus in Brooklyn. They're 85. They can hardly walk. They get in their walkers because they want to come hear Mozart, and I have nothing but admiration for those people. I mean, as with their blue hair and with their horrible perfume, they love music. And it always comes back to what Duke Ellington said. There's just good music and bad music, and that's it.
Well, here's some music from Trey Anastasio. I guess we'll have to see what time says, the passage of time says about Trey Anastasio's orchestral music. Time Turns Elastic with the New York Phil, performed at Carnegie Hall on September 12th. Joe Queenan, thanks for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you. It was great.
Still to come, a live performance in our studio of a different kind of fusion, flamenco and jazz, from the Brooklyn-based composer and bassist Alexis Cuadrado and a 9-piece ensemble. We'll hear a preview of their new work next.